This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Julia Jacobs. Bats sadly have a bad reputation, mainly due to misinformation and misconceptions. In reality, though, they are essential animals that provide important functions for the environment, among them pollination for important crops and seed dispersal. Lim Fun Ching is a researcher and a PhD candidate who co-authored the paper Pollination Implications of the Diverse Diet of Tropical Nectar-Feeding Bats Roosting in an Urban Cave, which was just released earlier this year. And she joins me now to discuss her findings and to explain why we all need to dispel these negative myths surrounding bats. Welcome, VC. How are you today?
Hi, I'm fine. Thank you, Julia, for having me here today.
My pleasure. So, bats, we, you know, as I mentioned, you know, they have a really bad rap, unfortunately. And I know bat ecologists and conservationists, they've actually worried that these exaggerated reputation, you know, for carrying diseases, for example, that lead to baseless killings of millions of bats worldwide. Is that something that you've been noticing as well?
Yes, it is, especially in Peninsula Malaysia, because in the late 90s, you know, everyone knows that there was a very horrible outbreak of this Nipah virus, and which have killed at least 105 Malaysians, and also it actually led to the culling of millions of domestic pigs, which is the reason why I believe this is the reason why people are very afraid of bats. So there's another problem is just at the backyard, they're already facing this kind of very bad experience with the bats. Like, they kept on complaining how the bats actually attacking their fruit trees by stealing their fruits and also making little holes in their roofs so that they can live in it. So these are actually the very negative experiences which I have heard from many people. But despite these negative experiences, like what you mentioned just now, bats play a very important role in the ecosystem. So we need to do something. We need to change the negative perception, particularly because we are the one who have caused them to lose their home.
Which is the reason
why, which is the reason why they are now living among us in the city,
and which is why they're coming to our fruit trees. And our, you know, it's that classic wildlife human conflict that's happening. Why did you sort of decide to embark on a PhD journey, you know, studying the bats of Peninsula Malaysia in particular?
Well, in Peninsula Malaysia, we have so many other charismatic mammals that are now facing extinction. For example, you know, the tigers and also the elephants. But, one particular group of mammals, which is the bats, are actually very least appreciated mammals. Although they are very important and there are people who actually study them, but they never actually talk about how these bats actually provide very important benefits to us. So which is why I'm studying the bats in Peninsula Malaysia, focusing on the seed dispersal and the pollination role. Then I want to tell people, despite these bats, despite living in a city, whatever they are doing now, like dispersing the seeds, it's actually helping to plant forests in the city itself. You don't need people to plant trees in the forest, in the city, when you already have the bats to do that. And it's the services are free. And same goes with the pollination. If you have bats living nearby your fruit orchards, you actually get higher yield of crops. And that's actually something that people never actually notice because it's something like intangible.
And I guess because, you know, bats aren't quite as charismatic, I suppose, as, you know, the tiger, for example, or all of that. So there's very little maybe recognition given or very little motivation to conserve them.
Yeah, that's true. Although bats can be considered charismatic, what happens every time I show them photos of the bats, people actually got intimidated by the photos. They felt that the bats are not very cute or adorable compared to elephants and tigers. So this is something that we need to change. We need to change that. Although they might not look as pretty or as adorable tigers and elephants are, they still play a very important role.
And, you know, we were talking about citizen science before this. So you are a proponent of citizen science for bats. And I think you even did a project previously. Could you tell me a little bit about that?
All right. So what I did is I actually involved university students in my citizen science project. I went to the Section 12 and Section 16 in Petaling Jaya area. And I asked these students to join me to catch a couple number of bats. So Most of them are actually never seen the bats before. Yeah. So the first night was very difficult. They had a hard time trying to handle the bats, trying to catch the bats. But by the end of the citizen science project, they gave very positive feedback. They said that this project actually has given them their first encounter with their bats, given them a chance to handle bats, to know how they can actually handle bats if they have such conflicts, for example, bats coming into their houses. And also at the same time, they realize that bats are very important animal.
Mm-hmm.
So by involving these university students alone in my citizen science project, it has shows that we can change the negative perception of bats, even in urban area.
Mm-hmm.
And another interesting outcome is the students actually promoted the project through their social media. So I believe they actually reach out to a bigger number of audiences, and that actually like highlighting they are bats in our urban area and they are very important.
Because, you know, like you mentioned earlier, the common perception of them is that they're pests, right? They should
exactly.
be killed, or they should be...
Yep.
And I think that they get a very bad rep for, like you mentioned earlier, also carrying disease. So people would just rather, you know, kill them rather than actually, you know, find out, you know, what actual benefits they have. So, I mean, when the project, the citizen science project that you did, you counted the number of bats. Was that, I mean, what was the reasoning for doing that whole project?
We did not really count the number of bats. We were more interested in knowing what kind of what species of bats we have in urban areas. So we have the most common bats, which we name as the lesser-nosed fruit bats, or scientifically known as the Cynopterus brachioides. This species is the most common bat in everywhere.
Okay.
Like you can find them everywhere, from forests to urban areas. So this is the one that people had the most conflict with.
Okay.
So because they are fruit bats, they tend to eat very ripe fruits. So that's another problem when orchard owners forget to harvest their fruits right after they are ripe, and they leave the fruits be too ripe. That actually attracted these fruit bats to attack their fruiting trees.
Right.
Same goes in the urban area. When you have fruiting trees in your backyard and you forget to harvest your fruits, that's actually the factor that attracted the bats to come into your house to feed on the fruits. So we found that these bats are the most common bats in the Kuala Lumpur and Petaling Jaya areas. And we also found that these bats are the one mainly responsible in dispersing the seeds of forest plants in urban area. So there was this one occasion, very unique experience, where we had the chance to capture this particular individual, and this bat was carrying a fig fruit with it. And when we tried to release it after we took all the measurements and identified the species, it just refused to fly away until we returned the fig fruit to the bat. Then only the bat grabbed the fruit and flew away.
Amazing.
Yes, that's one of the very unique, amazing experience we had during our citizen science project.
What an intelligent creature.
Yes, they are.
Oh my goodness. And you know, because you know, people always say, oh, blind is a bat and all of that, but they're not actually blind for
starters.
No, they
are not.
I mean, maybe there's something you want to debunk right now.
All right. So these fruit bats, these very common fruit bats, the reason why they look like a little dog, a small, tiny little dog with very big eyes. So these big eyes are actually the one that helps them to detect the fruits in dark areas. So that actually helps them. They actually can see very well in the dark because they have very big eyes. So contrary with the belief that bats are blind, no, they are not really blind. They have very good eyesight. That's the reason why they can find fruits easily at night. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And you know, from that study, that citizen science study, you know, I mean, what was the follow through from that whole project?
So most of the feedback that I got is, they kept on coming back to me and ask me, when are we going to have a second round of this project? And I say, not at the moment yet.
Yep.
So I believe that one day we can extend this project to secondary schools instead, rather than stopping at university level. So what we can do is we can identify the bat roosts in schools, because I have heard teachers complaining that they have these roosts in schools, especially those very old schools.
Yeah.
And then what we can do is we can get the school children to collect the fruits and also some feces below these roosts. And they can actually help us to identify what the bats are eating. And that can actually give us some information what else the bats are eating and hence dispersing and pollinating in urban area. Mm-hmm. And secondly, that's also allow us to know the distribution of the bats in urban area, whether this actually gives us an idea how can we mitigate the human bat conflicts in urban area.
Okay. And I mean, just something else that I was reading about you, you actually went through all the old literature, you know, on the subject of bats and found that there are at least 110 mm-hmm. bat species which have been documented in Peninsula mm-hmm. Malaysia, but your DNA analysis of bats revealed that there are actually many more bat species in the region which have not yet been formally described. So, you know, what does this even suggest then?
Well, this suggests that we may thought that we know a lot about the bats, but actually we may know very little about them. There are many, a lot of research avenues that are waiting for us to explore, particularly in this, the recent research that you were talking about. So what we have documented so far is only 110, mm-hmm. but like what you mentioned just now, DNA analysis suggests that there are at least 120 of them waiting for us to discover. So what I also found from this project is, there are some species that were documented in the 1980s, but were not documented after year 2000. So that's currently, this is a very worrying statement because currently, looking at how rapid our urbanization and also the expansion of the agricultural lands, if we keep on clearing the suitable habitats for these bats, such as the forest and also the limestone caves for the limestone mining.
Yeah.
We will lose more species than we previously don't know, which means that they are already heading towards the extinction, yet we don't know which species is heading towards the extinction. And at the moment, there are only two species that are being protected by the federal government, which are the flying foxes, but not the other species. Mm-hmm. And interestingly, what I found through this subject is most of the species that have yet to be described are actually not flying foxes. That's the other species, particularly those that feed on insects.
Okay.
Yeah, and we know that insect feeding bats are very important because they can be a biological pest controller.
Yep.
In Thailand, there's a study that shows that how these insect feeding bats, named Tadarita plicata, has actually helps to eliminate the insect pests in the paddy fields. And by doing that, they actually helps to prevent the loss of $1.2 million per year for the rice.
Wow. Yeah. And I mean, it's organic, it's natural, you know, it's insecticide free. It's, mm-hmm. you know, it's a wonderful biological, natural way of controlling pests.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I'm speaking today to Vun Ching Lim. She is a researcher and a PhD candidate, and she's actually been studying bats. And after this quick break, we'll find out more about her study, which is on the pollination implications of the diverse diet of tropical nectar feeding bats roosting in an urban cave. In this case, it was the Dark Cave in Batu Caves. We'll find out more after this quick break. You are listening to Earth Matters on the Bigger Picture, PFM 89.9. Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Julia Jacobs. In the studio with me today is Lim Vun Ching. She is a researcher and a PhD candidate, and she co-authored the paper Pollination Implications of the Diverse Diet of Tropical Nectar Feeding Bats Roosting in an Urban Cave. It's quite a mouthful there, but, you know, very important research. So tell me, you know, why did you want to study this, and why Batu Caves in particular?
All right. So in this urban area, in this Kuala Lumpur, you probably know that Batu Caves has experienced tremendous changes since the last 50 years. If you compare the current Batu Caves and the Batu Caves 50 years ago, you will be shocked. Now we have lost the area of the Batu Caves is actually shrinking. You see more and more houses mushrooming surrounding Batu Caves, and also you see more temples, roads, highways surrounding this Batu Caves, and also there's also a limestone quarry at the back of the Batu Caves. If you notice that, you can actually see that through Google Maps alone. So what happened if there's too much of urbanization or too much of development surrounding this Batu Caves? Sure. I was wondering how will it impact the bats in Batu Caves, mm-hmm. because we all know bats provide very important ecosystem services, including seed dispersal, pollination, and also controlling the insect pest. Mm-hmm. But here, I'm focusing on the pollination role of the bats roosting in Batu Caves. So I have a very good study from 1974, which I can compare to. Mm-hmm. I went back to the same site, studied the same colony, probably different generation, And I can tell that whatever I found today is very different than what they have reported in 1974. All right, so let's talk about the similarities. So in 1974, this study, they reported that these bats probably flew all the way to Kuala Selangor, which is 40 kilometers away, to feed on mangrove plants.
Okay.
Similarly, I also found mangrove plants in my study, which shows that after so many years, these bats are still going back to the Kuala Selangor, all the way from Batu Caves, to feed on mangrove plants. So they are probably very important pollinators of these mangrove plants. And I also also detected plants that were not reported in this study conducted in 1974, especially native plants that are found in Genting Highland.
In Genting, wow.
Yeah, so apparently they are not only heading towards the east, they are also heading towards the west as well,
okay,
in Genting Highland. So by doing so, they play a very important role in pollinating these native plants, mm-hmm, which we know very little about them. And then they're actually helping to exchange the genetic materials between these plants in different locations. And therefore, they can help to increase the genetic diversity and hence the resistance of these plants against particular disease.
Right.
So that's how important these bats are. And another interesting finding is I found that they've been feeding, because I conducted this study during the non-flower season of durian. So I was wondering, I know that this species in Thailand, they are the main pollinator of durians, but what happens, what are they pollinating when the durians are not flowering? I found a lot of jackfruits in my study,
okay,
which suggests that these bats, they're actually probably the main pollinator of jackfruits as well. And we know in local market, jackfruits are very important. A lot of local Malaysians love jackfruits, and also it play a very, is an important commercial crop as well.
Yeah.
So what I found is, despite living in Batu Caves, which are threatened by the rapid urbanization, these bats still play a very important role in pollinating not only the endemic plants, but also the commercial crops as well.
Okay. And how did you actually conduct your studies? Because I know you use something called DNA meta-barcoding.
Yeah.
What is that? Could you explain that?
All right. So if you can imagine yourself in a supermarket, then you grab a pack of cookies, and you scan the barcode behind, then that's how you know the price of the cookies. So now I try to apply this method in my study. Mm-hmm. So what I did is I collected the feces from the bats. Then I extracted the DNA of plants from the feces,
mm-hmm,
which I converted into the barcode, something like a barcode like behind your pack of cookies. And then I match it against a DNA database, which tells me what are the plants.
Right.
And so this whole method actually allows me to know what the bats are eating, and hence I can know what they are pollinating as well.
Right, right. Mm. And I mean, is that a difficult? It sounds like a difficult process.
Well, yes, you definitely need to spend a lot of time not only in the field, but in the lab as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit different than the current methodologies used in the current research on bats, so which makes this study very novel, because it's the first time DNA barcoding is used to study the diet of nectar-feeding bats, because previously people thought it's something that is impossible. But now that I've done this, it is a feasible method, and next we can apply it on another species of bats.
Okay, because this one was specifically nectar feeding, right?
Yes, I think the cave nectar bats.
Cave nectar bats.
Uniteris plia.
Ah, that's...
Yeah.
So the results then, I mean, this shows how, I guess, just how important they are and how, you know, the kind of role that, mm-hmm, they play in our ecosystem, essentially.
Yes.
And what are you hoping will come from this?
First, what I hope is that now that we know that Batu Caves is a very important roost for bats,
mm-hmm,
so we need to protect the Batu Caves. Because bats, here in this study, I can say that bats should be treated as an umbrella species. Because bats, they pollinate a lot of plants. And then when you protect the bats, you get to protect the plants.
Mm-hmm.
And when you protect these plants, that actually provides benefit to us. Especially when bats are pollinating the commercial crops, which are economically important to us.
Yep.
And some of these plants are actually staple food for us as well. So what we need to do is, we need to protect these bats as an umbrella species, and then when we protect this umbrella species, we get to protect everything else under this umbrella species. But first thing we need to do is we need to protect the Batu Caves, which is the important route for this umbrella species. We need to stop the development. Probably we can't stop it at the moment, but what we can do is we need to slow it down. We need to identify the bound. We need to set a boundary between the housing areas and also the construction of the roads surrounding the Batu Caves. Because when you keep on building more and more houses and roads surrounding the Batu Caves, the area that is suitable to, that is suitable as the habitat for not only bats but plants as well is shrinking.
Yeah.
And that eventually will have detrimental effect on us.
Mm-hmm.
So what we need to do is we need to set a boundary between Batu Caves and also the next development projects.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I mean, are you seeing, are you going to try and use this research to sort of, you know, give that to the authorities, for example, you know, the planning authorities, the government, you know, are you going to hopefully try and do something with that as well?
Yes, I'm trying to do that. At the moment, I'll be participating in a competition called FameLab, organized by the British Council. What I hope is during the competition, I get to talk about my ideas about protecting these bats, especially Batu Caves. And then I want to tell them we need to protect not only these bats, but also the important roosts. And then what I hope is they will be part of this project. They will be part of my conservation goals. And hopefully, especially with the election coming soon, hopefully the candidates will actually consider having these goals related to the conservation in their manifesto as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like we mentioned, bats just aren't really given a second thought. You know, they have a very bad rap, unfortunately. So I guess, you know, it's important that studies like these are shown and, you know, are spread widely so that people actually understand. Because like you mentioned also, you know, that, you know, when a bat comes to roost in your house, the first thing you try to do is to try and kill them.
Exactly.
Or to get rid of them, right? I mean, what would your advice be if, let's say, bats come to roost in your place?
Yeah, that's the very common question that people always throw at me. How can we get rid of bats that are living in our house? So
I think the question is, how do we live together?
Yeah, so I felt that that's not the right question. The correct question would be, how can you actually live together with the bats in harmony?
Yeah.
We have to understand that the bats are actually very loyal animals. They were very loyal to their roost. So perhaps 20 years ago, before you build your house there, that place used to be the home to the bats.
Mm-hmm.
Then when you clear the forest,
the land, yeah.
Yeah, and then you build your house there, the bats still assume that your house is actually their home. That is another reason why they keep on coming back to your house, no matter how hard you try in getting rid of these bats. So the question here is, we are the one who actually invaded their home rather than the bats invading our home. So what we can do now is, probably we need to consider how to live with them in harmony. Perhaps if you don't want the bats to damage your houses, the roofs of your houses, what I would suggest is build a bat house. Yes, build a bat house at your backyard, and hopefully the bats will actually move to the bat house rather than to your roof. Because we need to understand that these bats, even though they are in the city, even though they are living at your home, they still provide very important ecosystem services. Perhaps they are the one actually helping to pollinate your fruiting trees which you plant at your backyard. If you don't have these bats, your fruiting trees will never achieve fruit.
Yeah.
So what I suggest is, perhaps you can consider building a bat house at your backyard. And hopefully they will actually stop the bats from making holes in your roof.
But how does one actually even build a bat house? I mean, what sort of considerations do we need to take into mind?
It depends on the species. Some species, they tend to roost in a very large colony. So let's say if you get common fruit bats, those bats that look like little fox or little dogs, then you probably don't need a very big bat house. And then you can just make it using those plywood, some discarded wooden materials, which you can get it easily. You can just build something like a dog house or a bird house. Yeah, just that it has to be elevated because the bats do not actually fly, they don't fly that low. So you probably need to build an elevated dog or bird house for these bats. But if you have the species that looks like, they don't really look like dogs, you probably have insect feeding bats in your home at your home instead. Then you probably need to build a bigger bat house because these species tend to roost in a larger colony.
Sure.
Yeah, but you have to bear in mind, even if it's an insect feeding bats, they are probably helping you to eliminate the mosquitoes and cockroaches at your home.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Just for that, I would build a house for them. You know, what kind of research do we still need, especially in Malaysia, you know, regarding bats?
Mm-hmm.
And why would you think that?
So I know that a lot of people are actually studying the relationship between bats and plants because they want to know what is their role in dispersing the seeds and hence planting the forest in the degraded land and also their role in pollination and hence their role in the pollinating the commercial crops. But I felt that there's actually one research avenue that we have overlooked is what is the role of bats as biological pest control in the agricultural farms. We have a lot of studies from the foreign countries, but we have very little such studies in Malaysia. So probably the next research avenues that other people should explore is actually understanding the diet of the insect feeding bats, then determine whether their preference to feed particular insect pests actually helps to have some impact on the agricultural industry.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that something that you might be interested in doing?
Oh, yeah. That will be my next research avenues.
Okay. Well done. Yeah. Okay. So so you're continuing in your PhD project that's still ongoing as well?
No, it's already completed. I already submitted my thesis.
Okay. Cool. Well done.
Yeah, thank you. So that will be something I would like to explore after this. So now at the moment, I'm trying to get the right person, right person to be part of my team and also trying to raise some funds to start this project. But I believe that if we can do that, we can really change the negative perception of bats. Because especially as a biological pest controller for the rice, because rice in Malaysia is a staple food.
Yeah.
If we can prove that these bats are very important pest controller for the rice industry, and that, I believe, will really change the negative perception of bats.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much, Wen Ching. And I guess, you know, for anyone listening, if they encounter bats and they don't know what to do with it, let's say they can even maybe get in touch with you just to find out how they can kind of, you know, mitigate the conflict that's happening between them.
Yeah, sure. I always have people contacting me through Facebook, through phone messages. Uh-huh. Yeah. So I'm more than happy to give some advice how to handle such encounters with bats.
Okay. And let's say, you know, we have a bat who's just kind of like landed in our house or whatever, and maybe they're afraid to touch it. You know, maybe they've got the negative perception that they're disease carrying, for example. You know, how should we best handle a bat if like one were to land up in our doorstep?
If you see the bats are flying around, you can probably just leave the door or the window open, and then the bats are very intelligent animals. They know how to get out from your home, provided that you leave your door or windows open. And if you notice that the bats are very weak, they are not flying, probably I'll suggest you to put a cup of syrup, water laced with sugar, just near the bats, because when the bats are already tired from the previous night's foraging. Sure. So hopefully that the bats will feed on the syrup, and then they will go away very soon.
Okay, so the key is not to kill them, right?
Yeah, not to kill them. You don't have to touch them. They just know how to get out, provided you leave the doors and windows open.
Okay. Yeah. And if you're thinking about it, build a bat house.
Yeah.
And plant some fruit trees and, you know, everyone benefits from it, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you so much, Wen Ching. Great. I've been speaking to Wen Ching Lim. She is a researcher and PhD candidate, and she just released a study which showed the pollination implications of the diverse diet of tropical nectar-feeding bats roosting in an urban cave. And you can look for Wen Ching through her Facebook account.
VC Lim.
All right. If you miss any part of this interview or any previous Earth Matters interviews, you can search for the podcast on our BFM app, which is available on Google Play and the App Store. This has been Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.